It is good to be together. It is good to be together in this new year and new decade, 2020. Pretty remarkable. When my parents had a seat bought for them at Massey Hall, they had to put a little, it was their 50th wedding anniversary, and they had to put a little inscription on it. And my dad's inscription was, and I won't say the swear word he used, but it was tempus darn fugit, which means time travels too darn fast. It does. Welcome to 2020. So the passages you heard this morning all fit kind of neatly together. Many of you already know that we tend to worship based on the 3-year common lectionary. And there's a series of readings that we pick from the verses of the Hebrew Bible or Testament or writings, as I'm sure Carol would want me to call them, and the writings of the early church. And there are actually 4 readings in each week, 2 from the older, a reading and a psalm, and 2 from the newer, a reading from one of the 4 Gospels that tell overlapping stories of the life of Jesus, and a reading from one of the epistles, or the letters, most of which are attributed to Paul, formerly Saul. For this week, we have read the older Testament passage from the prophet Isaiah, and we've read a part of the letter to the Ephesians, and we've read the Epiphany story from the Gospel of Matthew. And incidentally, the Epiphany story, the story of the Magi, it only appears in that book, in the book of Matthew, in the Bible. Now, these all fit together rather neatly, rather too neatly. The older, much older Isaiah passage was written at a time when the people of Israel are in exile in Babylon. They have been overthrown, exiled, the temple destroyed. It is 600 years before the date we have for Jesus' birth. Isaiah is describing the joy of a people who, in the midst of such despair, are told by the king of Persia that they can return home. Arise, shine, for your light has come. This is the pre-party to the homecoming, the tailgate party to the football match, if you will. It is not the prophecy of an anticipated Messiah. And yet we in the Christian tradition have appropriated the language and the meaning of the passage. We have partnered this passage with the passage in Matthew of the Magi and seen a direct thread from one to the other. And we come by this honestly. Matthew does it all the time. In his narrative of Jesus as the anointed one, the Messiah, the one to deliver the Jews from their oppressors, he continually reinforces Jesus as Messiah by plucking pieces of the writings of such as Isaiah and Micah and other Hebrew prophets and inserting them without context into the story of Jesus. Isaiah was not writing in this passage that we heard this morning. He was not writing of Jesus or the wise men or presents given. He was writing of a specific promise by a ruler to a people in a specific time and place. A people who, as the song says, were weeping by the rivers of Babylon, remembering Zion. So let us not tie these two too closely together this morning. Let us tie them together in another way. From the passage in Isaiah to the story of the Magi to us, there is a thread and there is a teaching. And I invite you to follow it with context in 2020. And the thread between these stories and the story of the Magi is the Epiphany, always the 12th day of Advent. It is a word that in the Christian calendar is synonymous with this weird and wonderful story of wise men from the east who follow a star to where it stops over Bethlehem. The Epiphany, a term which most of you will know means sudden revelation, is here the particular manifestation or the appearance of this child Jesus to the wise men. An epiphany is a sudden intuitive perception of insight into the reality or essential meaning of something, usually initiated by some simple or commonplace occurrence or experience. You can have an epiphany over breakfast. Now, I'm going to ask you to consider this morning, to reconsider this story, using not the eyes of the Christmas pageant or the ears of the Christmas carol. I'm going to ask you this morning to hear and to see this story as the writer of Matthew wrote it. Two popular and enduring misconceptions about this story. There are not three, and these are not kings. It is later writings that have given number and profession to those in this tale. It was actually the Venerable Bede, and I would love one day to be called the Venerable Bede. It was the Venerable Bede in the 600s who named the three and gave them the physical attributes of disparate races, thus reinforcing the popular idea that it is not actually in Matthew's story, but the popular idea that the wise men came from different races to bring Christ to the Gentiles. It is probably more accurate to tell a tale of a caravan that included magi, servants, supplies, traveling for weeks, not years. In those days, there were astrologers or magi who studied the heavens for portents of significant events, a meteor shower, a shooting star, an eclipse of the moon or the sun. One can think of the impact of these events on those of that time. It is from this word magi that we get magic. These men were considered learned, and thus the reference to the wise men. We know that there were such men and that they traveled to visit important kings, as they are written of by such ancient authors as Pliny. Not sure if it was the elder or the lesser, however you refer to Pliny. But Pliny, who report an actual visit to Nero, the Emperor Nero, in the year 66. And Matthew uses these wise men, uses their story. We have no idea of the truth of it. We have no idea if it is two or three stories conflated, if it is the product of the writer's imagination, coupled with a story related to him of an incident involving such traveling astrologers, or if every word of it is true. We just don't know. And what a story Matthew weaves. These men would have been perhaps cutting-edge thinkers of that day, sort of the metaphysicists of Mesopotamia. They had curiosity, and that's the first of the three C's of the title of this sermon. They had curiosity. They were on the search for meaning, on the lookout for why, seeking meaning in the incredible, ever-changing panorama, the canopy encountered on looking up into the night sky. And in the course of the curiosity, they have created community. Others who are seeking, who are full of this curiosity, the second of these three C's, and they have headed out in the community of the caravan to see where it will lead. We have no idea what that journey entailed, but I imagine it involved the requisite amount of discovery, self and geographic, the usual amount of squabble and peace amongst the community, with a sprinkling of high drama and the ever-present tension between lovers and would-be lovers. It's community. And every 12 hours there was the night sky to examine and to dissect and to deliberate in order to set the next day's course. And in due course, they came to Jerusalem in the time of King Herod, after the birth of Jesus, seeking meaning, seeking the King of the Jews. Although this sounds mighty strange to our ears to hear that somehow a star moving across the sky would identify a king, it was normal to the ears of Matthew. In fact, it was more than normal. It was an integral reinforcing of the story of Jesus. Even the stars were aligned. Even the wise were in agreement. And then Matthew introduces Herod, And there's some double dealing and some elements of treachery, and he introduces tension and plot twists. And then he provides the epiphany, the sudden intuitive perception of or insight into the reality or essential meaning of something initiated by a simple or commonplace occurrence or experience. Here, it's a baby. A baby. This never fails to get me. In the Christmas story or here, they found the babe wrapped in swaddling clothes and laying in a manger. Epiphany alert. Insight out of common experience. And when they came to the place where Jesus laid, they discovered a remarkable truth that transcended their immediate context and led them into alien territory. In a surprising location far from home, they found what they had been searching for in the birth of a child to a young peasant woman. They found what they had been searching for in the birth of the child, and they fell to their knees and were overwhelmed with joy, we hear. And these wise men of Matthew had found the third of the three C's of this sermon, caritas. In Latin and in English, it's translated sometimes as charity. Or as love. We tend to translate this word mostly as love, hence faith, hope, and love in the letter of the Corinthians, but it is not this. Or we translate it as charity, as in faith, hope, and charity, but it is not this. It is caritas. And the best we can do to translate that word is self-giving love. The love God gives to the world, and we, as a result, are able to give to God and to one another. It is, in the words of Aquinas, Thomas Aquinas, caritas is that which unites us to God. Part of a poem, and I'm going to try to sort of expand on this a little bit this morning, part of a poem by Christine Rogers. They saw simultaneously the mighty unblinking star that would lead them all to their greatest challenge. They hurried then from each of their corners and found themselves together in the doorway of a stable, gazing upon an infant only a few days old. As they bent in adoration with those already gathered, there was no choice, no other choice but to kneel. The majesty of the world was before them. Those words are an epiphany into themselves. The majesty of the world was before them in the birth of a child, and it is there yet and always will be. Now, I'm going to introduce something right now, and you probably don't have it in front of you, and I apologize. There are copies at the back, but there are three photographs in the printed copy of your sermon. And as a picture is worth a thousand words, and there are three pictures, I am saving you from 3,000 more words in this sermon. The first depicts a kayaker rappelling with his kayak down a huge waterfall on a never-before-run river. I have no idea where this river is, but it is unbelievable that he is doing this. This is curiosity, and the majesty of the world is before us. The second picture is a picture of a school of fish traveling in a ball that is 27 feet wide. Imagine that, a school of fish traveling in a ball 27 feet wide. This is community, and the majesty of the world is before us. And the third is a self-portrait of a man named Corey Richards. And the expression on his face, you have to believe, see to believe. He has just dug himself out of an avalanche. This is caritas. The expression on his face is the shock of the realization of the gift of life freely given by God. And the majesty of the world is before us. From a marvelous piece you've probably heard by David Foster Wallace, there are two young fish swimming along. and they happen to meet an older fish swimming the other way who nods at them and says, "Morning, boys, how's the water?" And the two young fish swim on a bit, and then eventually one of them looks over at the other and says, "What the heck is water?" And the majesty of the world is before us, and we don't know it. And when the child grew, he began to teach. On curiosity, he said, "I tell you the truth, unless you change and become like little children, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven." On community, "Where two or three are gathered, I am there among them." On Caritas, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and all your soul and all your mind. This is the greatest and first commandment, and the second is like it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself." And on these two commandments hang all the laws and all the prophets. Curiosity, community, and caritas. This is water. From Isaiah, "Then you shall see and be radiant, then your heart shall thrill and rejoice." This is the Epiphany. May it be so in 2020. Amen.